That's me on the podcast, sharing a song with something to say about it. With Thin Lear and Niagara Moon, losing my opinion.
I want to talk to you about theft right now.
Oh boy.
Stealing art. Do you think there are podcasts out there that we've stolen from? I was thinking about Analyze Fish. I feel like there's some connection there.
Yep, Scott Aukerman, Harris Whittles, RIP. Yeah.
The Dollop. Do you think there are podcasts that have stolen from us?
Oh, wow.
That'd be great. I would love that.
Yeah, and we can sue.
I want to talk about a lot of court battles today.
I did use AI to like make a fake Thin Lear Spotify profile, just like make new songs as you. Using your likeness without your permission.
That I'm okay with. I feel like...
Some Thin Lear sound bots out there.
If that's your prerogative, then hey. You know, there are... And this is already immediately getting to a tangent, but like there are these like really deadly playlists that... It's just like these people that are maniacs who go around taking songs that are like doing okay in the algorithm and then dropping it into their horrific bot playlist.
Oh, yeah. And then those people get reported.
They get reported and then your stuff gets taken down.
Violating Spotify's terms of service.
One of my buddies
that's really
was going through it, and TuneCore and DistroKid, all these places, like they don't care and Spotify doesn't care. So
you're fucked as the independent artist. Like, yeah, I'm waiting for that to happen to me.
It's a huge problem. Yeah, it's nothing you can do about it because you can't, you know, Spotify is so one direction that you can't even, there's no one to complain to.
It's hard to be a musician, folks. It ain't all candy and unicorns.
I know, yeah, our listeners probably think it's amazing to be a musician right now, but yeah, it's difficult.
Wait, was this going somewhere or is that all
you got? No, well, it is going somewhere, but I need to get to my segment, but I don't want to do that.
Okay, all right, well, speaking of AI, I did want to mention something briefly.
Your robot?
Hey, I got to cut that out now. Stop giving away the secrets. I am a program, but... My wife, Huimin, has recently been playing a lot of Chapel Roan.
Okay.
Totally get the hype. That's a lot of really catchy, well-written, executed songs on that album, whatever it's called. She's been playing a lot of it in the car. I'm getting a lot of those hooks in my brain. I fully accept that music is not for me at all. Like, if it's something that is youthful and exciting and you could throw it on at, like, a college freshman party, that I have no need for it. It's not in my life, but I'm okay with that. But... I want to say there is a version of Pink Pony Club, AI Plankton from SpongeBob.
Oh, we're going back to this? Okay.
So it's Plankton singing Chapel Roan. It's powerful. That got me. That I would listen to in my spare time. He's got the pipes.
Okay.
God, we're happy time. You're a pink pony girl, and you dance at the club. Oh,
that's like one of the best applications of AI I've heard yet.
Sounds good. We did a whole episode where we did mostly SpongeBob characters, or it was all SpongeBob characters?
Yeah, we did a whole SpongeBob AI episode already, so right, well, I have to just make it an honorable mention now. I can't do that again.
Okay.
Or can I? Oh, I'm getting a no.
If you'd like.
Getting the thumbs down there. Should we introduce
sure,
the show?
Yeah.
All right. This is the Full of Tangents, just wandering off out of the frame. Music podcast. Losing my opinion, I am barn wedding frequenting indie artist Niagara Moon, aka Thomas Irwin.
Jeez, what am I going to do with that? I am.
You ever been to a barn wedding?
I am the guy who has been to one barn wedding. No, actually, two barn weddings. Indie musician.
They're hot.
Thin Lear, aka Matt Longo.
They're the happening thing.
I was late to one because we were driving and got lost in a marsh. It was because it was a true barn. This was not like a faux barn. This
oh,
was
man.
Yeah. In the middle of nowhere. Speaking of the middle of nowhere, I'm going to pick up from where I left off in this intro. I want to talk today. I don't know how we've missed this on the show, but like legendary lawsuits and public feuds over.
That's been on my list melodies. For a while. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough because like a lot of them have been covered quite a bit. You know, like the famous Blurred Lines case, Robin Thicke and Pharrell jacking. Marvin Gaye's got to give it up.
You're going through my list here.
Stairway to Heaven lifted from the band Spirit, which is actually shockingly close. I didn't, you know.
That one That is justified.
They got a case.
That's some bullshit.
Especially when the song is as ridiculously successful as it was.
They could set aside a few million to give to Spirit at point. Yeah.
My Sweet Lord, of course, probably being the most, maybe the most famous. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in saying that.
Yeah, and that one, I'm with George Harrison. I don't.
It's pretty standard chord changes there.
Yeah.
Cat Stevens and Coldplay.
Cat Stevens and Flaming Lips.
Cat Stevens and Flaming Lips. Yes.
That one was justified on Cat Stevens' part.
The list goes on. Cat Stevens is a prickly pear, so he's not going to let that go. But we have some artists today who actually did kind of let it go. But there are some tunes that did nick a melody, like maybe unintentionally. Like, I don't want today to be like a finger pointing thing. That's not what I'm talking about. We said it up top, like, we have each done this. You know, you write a song.
We're not hashtagging.
No,
we're
not, this is not.
We're not doing some grassroots activism.
Definitely not. No, I don't care enough about this to be able to do that. And
you don't have time.
I don't have time to be
that
doing
busy.
This. Maybe, you know, sometimes I think with these melodies, they're like floating in the air and maybe a few different people grab it. In particular, there's a few today that are like, you know, you hear them a lot, but amazingly for the ones that we're going to talk about today, it didn't hurt the credibility of the song nor the artist. And it's not even really talked about much. For the folks that we're talking about today, we're going to discuss some under the radar lifting of melodies and changes.
I like this.
Or as I say, changes. You say the
chord progressions.
Chord progressions. And we're going to put on our detective hats and try to get to the bottom of these. Mm. And I want to know your opinion. Like, are these songs close enough where the original artists need to be given their due, or is everybody in the clear and it's just like, it's art.
This is great.
So we're going to actually start off today with a song that the whole segment could have been based on because it is so picked apart, this song.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure you know it. You're a fan of the band. It's from one of the best albums of the 60s, Village Green, Preservation Society.
Ah, yes.
And of course, The Kinks.
The Kinks.
I'm not going to say anything about it first, but the song is called Picture Book. This is a great song. It's not even my favorite song off that album. It's a good one. I want to just listen to it first.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take you to two different segments of it. And then I want to look into a couple different exhibits that we can review.
Mm-hmm. I am just nerdy enough to admit I know which modern day comparison you're going to make and say, hey, this sounds similar. Like, I know where this is going.
You might know
The Kinks' Picture Book.
One of them.
Oh, you got multiple.
I have three.
Oh my God.
This whole episode could be about The Kinks' Picture Book. And I almost did. I mean, it could be. Like, I was just like, oh, nobody's going to want to listen to this. But there are so many songs that jack this song. I don't know why. Whoa. Maybe we can get to the bottom of it, and it's a lot of songs where you know, there's rumblings about the potential theft or lifting, whatever you want to call it, but you know, no real legal situation.
Sure,
but
sure.
Let's listen to a little bit of this song first, and then we can kind of unfurl it from there.
I love this. I was meaning to get around to this idea, but I could never put it together. What's that great quote, though? One of my absolute all-time favorite artists, I've called him the greatest American songwriter, Paul Simon. It's quoted as saying, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
I didn't know he said that.
That's coming from Mr. P.S. himself.
That's great. So. I love that. And he's right. Yeah.
But yeah, so we're going to start it from the top with the Kinks' Picture Book here.
Start from the top, and then we'll take it to the outro.
This is from, 67, 68, this album?
This is 68.
The Village Green Preservation Society.
You're getting on. Sat by the fireside, pondering on. Picture book, pictures of your mama, taken by your papa a long time ago.
It's like a children's song or something.
With each other to prove they love each other.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Take it to like 2 minutes and 15 seconds or something like that, close to the end. Yeah.
Picture book.
So Okay. I love that song.
Yeah.
Let us in rapid fire fashion, and you know the song I'm going to send you, but let's just, for the listener, let's just fire right into this song. As I'm getting old, the chip upon my shoulder, blown through life, you roll over and die. La 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 la.
This is the same song, you just turned down the tape speed. Is it a different song? What?
The Scooby Dooby Doo. Doo. The great Mac DeMarco.
Old Mackie DeMarco there. Look, Salad Days 2013.
I know he's an indie god. I wouldn't dare challenge the man. I am a fan. He also seems like a spectacularly great dude.
Maybe he's worked on himself now. Yeah, I've heard he was really always so great in his alcoholic days, but I don't know the deets.
He is funny.
He's funny.
And his sound is unique, or it was before everyone started sounding like him, and now Spotify is like Mac DeMarco B-side
land. It's a whole genre now.
But that melody is note for note. I mean, it's just, it is his picture book. And even the inflection, like, Ray Davies has a very unique approach to singing. This is not like the singer of like Godsmack or something. Like, Ray Davies is his own thing, where he has this lazy, drawl kind of delivery. Yeah. And Mac just like nicked it. Like the... and it's like, he doesn't even sing like that regularly, Mac DeMarco. So
yeah,
I think in his
subconscious
brain, he was just doing this song. And the first time I heard it, I actually thought it was one of those songs where like the artist starts to like half cover another song as like an homage.
Yeah.
I thought he segued into it, but like, not so. But that's just, you had that in your head already. You were aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I pieced that together on my own.
Let's see if you pieced this together, though.
Okay.
This next band, this is the same song. We're still talking about picture books. We've not talked about Green Day much on this podcast. Doesn't seem like it'd be your kind of band.
Never got into them. Yeah.
They were important to me during a period of time in my teens.
In the deli days. Forget about the Salad Days.
Even before that.
The Mortadella Days.
The Mortadella Days. This was like, I don't know, I was like 12 when I was into them.
Karate
we've
Days.
Never spoken about them. The Karate Days, yes. Let's listen to the song, because I do feel like this is another subconscious Nick that maybe is a little bit less overt than the last one.
So this is Warning by Green Day. What is this from the American Idiot album, or what's...
No. This is long before that.
Huh.
This is...
This is some 90s stuff then?
This is from 2000. So they're kind of like, at this point, they were just starting to get back on their feet after the devastation of their early career did on them, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, they're getting back to form here.
I've never heard this song, as far as I know.
I like it.
That's the fucking picture book riff, my dude.
Yes, there it is again.
That's not even just like a vocal outro part. This is like the crux of the song. This is a
public
But then the vocal melody here is different. It's the inverse.
Yes, it is at least different than what Mac was doing. So, you know, Green Day is not typically known for doing acoustic driven songs like that. So I feel like in the arrangement it sort of gives it away that there was a subconscious connection here, that there was a subconscious lift, because you could say that that walking up and down the guitar neck riff is not super unique. You know, it's not like some prog riff that Ray and Dave Davies came up with, but the combination in this song between that and the arrangement, which is like using the acoustic to drive the song for a band that is really not known for doing that, feels like there was something going on in their brains when they wrote this one, and they made the connection without even realizing it.
Yeah, it's because they didn't take it wholesale. They just took that one riff part of Picture Book. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's dicey. I guess that can
dicey.
Go either way.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel somehow it's like more and less egregious than the Mac DeMarco thing. Like, it's less conscious, but then it's like also way more like a musical just grab. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're not done with talking about Picture Book.
Oh, boy.
Here's another song by a band called Stereogram. And this was like kind of a hit back in the day. They're a New Zealand rock band called Stereogram from the early aughts.
Never heard of them.
This one is a little bit less of a rip than the others because it's just like the riff. But I feel like it's still... It would merit a conversation between publishers, I think.
Mm. This song's called Walkie Talkie Man from the album Schmack. That's a good title.
Love that. I do love that title.
I've never heard of this. So this is also early 2000s, you said?
Yep. People were really into Village Green in the early 2000s.
They're ripping off Green Day.
Right, so this is, yes, yes. So, like, this is, like...
It's just the riff.
Different song, period. But,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, it's, like, at the heart of the song.
Yeah. Wow, it's like a copy of a copy.
Yeah, and that happens again in a song we're going to talk about in a second. First, here. Let's move on. I feel like we could talk about Picture Book all day. There
Apparently.
Was like another two or three songs that were close to that. I don't know if it's just, as I said before, that the riff is just like not super unique, but I don't know. There's something about the arrangements then of the songs too, like with the Green Day one that felt like very on the nose.
And they're in the same tempo.
Yeah.
It's like the feel is the same, like the rhythm.
And the Mac one, that's just, I mean, there should be a lawsuit.
He knows what he's doing there, ridiculous.
But okay, so this next one, no lawsuit here. Again, nobody's upset about anything. But this song, this is by The Doors. This is People Are Strange from their sophomore record, 1967. Great album.
Strange Days.
Love this song. Love that record. Have always been a fan of Ray Manzarek's honky tonk piano in this one. It sounds like he's in like a haunted house. But
and Robbie Krieger's guitar.
Oh, gorgeous. Yeah, let's listen to a little bit of it. And then I want to do this, what we just did, just pivot to the artist without saying anything.
All right, so we're totally switching zones now. We're going back to the original.
Yes. Yes. Source material.
The Doors here. This is the next origin point.
Yeah.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
Okay.
People are strange when you're a stranger.
Classic.
Classic. Unimpeachable. Right? I mean, just a great song. And I would say, maybe different from the last tune, a really unique melody.
Yeah, very, well, you got that jazz influence. Ray Manzarek, the would-be Herbie Hancock over there.
All right, so the next song we're going to listen to, I'm not going to give it away who it is, though I don't even know if...
I don't know where we're going
most
next
of our listeners even listen to this artist. Maybe they're so huge. But let's not introduce them. Let's just listen to this song. So to focus on the melody.
Just going blind.
What do you want from me? Why don't you run from me? What are you wondering? What do you know? Why aren't you scared of me? Why do you care for me? When we all fall asleep, where do we go?
Come here.
Say it, spit it out. What is it exactly?
I'll allow it.
You're going to allow it?
I'll allow it, yeah.
Why? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. So this is, I don't know if you've heard of her, Billie Eilish.
I've never seen a music video of hers until just now.
Famously uses the opening music for the last season of True Detective, which was a little bit annoying. Like, yeah, okay, Billie needs the exposure.
That show, that wasn't True Detective, whatever that shit was.
I like the first half of it.
Not my True Detective.
But yeah, you don't think that's like inarguably the same exact melody?
It's similar. It's certainly similar. I heard the parallel right away. No, but it's a different feel. I'm not going to be able to put it into words. It's not exactly the same vocal melody. Sure, if you played out that first part on a piano, you could represent both songs probably very similarly, but I'll allow it. That's where I'm coming from. Maybe the listener feels differently, but that's like a George Harrison fucking band that he supposedly ripped off, like one of those situations.
Okay.
I forget what was that band called that he got sued by for My Sweet Lord?
I don't remember. It's like the Chiffons or something.
Something like that.
It was a girl group.
It feels like a similar thing. Like, yes, if you broke it down, bring the musicologist into the courtroom, you could make a case, but it's definitely unconscious.
Okay.
It's the song just feels too different for it to, she's, you know, her voice is totally different. The arrangement, the rhythmic feel isn't as, it's not like that moon dance swing jazzy feel.
Okay.
It's something else. I'll, yeah.
We'll allow it. Okay. All right. Hey, you know, I'm no judge, jury, executioner, right? This is.
All right. But you feel differently?
I feel like that melody is pretty spot on, but I agree that the vibe is different, but the melody still is the thing that is driving that particular song. There's not a lot happening in that tune. So.
And it seems like it goes on to a different section though.
It does,
right?
But it comes back.
Cut it off.
It comes back. Yeah.
All right. And YouTube comments are posting references to The Doors. So some other people are hearing what we're hearing.
All right. Well, I'm surprised anyone is talking about that.
Wow.
For the last thing we talk about today, I want to go in the reverse order.
Okay.
We're going to start. We're going to walk our way. We're going to shimmy our way back
all right.
in time.
So a third example overall. Different song.
Different song. Different melody. Let's start with the latest example of the melody, because this one is endless. Like this, we could just keep going. With
okay, this yeah, yeah.
But let's start here.
Any context, or we're just...
This is Lana Del Rey. That is all I'm going to say. It's a song called Get Free, which was released...
Snooze.
...in 2017.
I never understood her appeal. All right, from the album Lust for Life. Well, that's an Iggy Pop album title, first of all. All right, Get Free. Let's see what this lady's doing here.
To the reveal of my heart. Undoubtedly, that will for certain take the dead out of the sea and the darkness from the arts.
Anything yet?
I mean, it's the creep chord progression, but I'm waiting to see what she does with the vocal melody. you can't do that. No, fuck that. That's too close.
Right? That's the exact
same. She's not steering away from it enough.
That was the exact same moment that I felt that too. It was like, like that bit. Yes.
Yeah, this is bullshit.
So, we don't have to listen to Creep, do we? Our listeners know Creep.
I'm a creep.
There it is. You're listening to Tommy York now. There he is.
It's you start at the root, then you go to the third, then you go to the fourth, then you go to the minor fourth. I don't belong here. And there's other songs that do that chord progression. It's not an uncommon harmonic thing, but she just fucking dives right into the creep vocal cadence, and it's game over as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's do a little something now. Let's click on the latest link that I just sent you.
So many links.
Just the last one.
The last one, okay.
Yeah, because we don't have to listen to Creep. But take a listen to this now. This is a song by the Hollies called The Air That I Breathe. And I want you to listen to this song.
Oh, man. Are they like a 60s band? Like, how far are we back? Are we going here?
This was released in 1974. The Hollies are primarily late 60s group.
1974. The song is called The Air That I Breathe. I really do not know much from the Hollies. Let's see why you posted this here.
Can't think of anything.
it's a little different there. They went back to the one sooner.
No cigarettes, no sleep, no light.
I'm okay with this.
No sound.
Well, guess who wasn't okay with it?
The Hollies.
The Hollies publisher. So out of all the songs we listened to today, out of all of that, the yes. Mac DeMarco one, Lana Del Rey one.
Oh, these were all lawsuits.
None of these were lawsuits. None of these songs, except...
Oh, one as in, they, yeah, just never got brought
this
up.
This one?
Except the Hollies against Radiohead?
They have a co-write on Creep.
Oh, man.
They've got themselves a co-write on Creep. And I was going to ask you, before you said that, that was all right. I was going to ask you, out of all the songs we listened to today, which one do you think actually went to court?
This would not have been my guess.
And they lost, and they received songwriting credit on the tune, which is not well known.
Wow.
We're both Radiohead fans. I didn't know that until I started researching this episode. And it's crazy because that song is so insanely popular and no one gives a shit that
no one who's a Radiohead fan, I think, has the Hollies on their radar unless that's a totally separate point of entry.
And think about like Blurred Lines or whatever. Like, I love Marvin Gaye.
I love Robin Thicke.
I was aware of that
Is
song.
Is that what you're about to say?
I love me some Robin Thicke. I love Got to Give It Up. And I thought that when I heard the song, like, oh, that sounds like they sampled it.
Yeah, that
it.
Was fucking
but
shameless.
But I don't think
off.
That song is not, it's not a Heard Through the Grapevine or something. That's not a song people are super well aware of beforehand.
Right.
And I don't think they're well aware of it, maybe a little bit after. But Air That I Breathe, I don't think the modern music listener is thinking about that song or the Hollies.
I'd never heard of it until just now, yeah.
Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy when you think about the one-to-one with some of the melodies we heard, and then that's the one that they got nailed for. It seems like it's based on the quality of your lawyer.
Yeah. And I was going to say, oh, Radiohead has bigger coffers than like Mac DeMarco, but Lana Del Rey, like, she could have been a pretty good target.
She's got the
for...
money. Yeah.
Oh,
man, I don't know.
Wow.
Craziness. And this is just, like, this is one of those things, one of those topics where we could
just keep going and going.
Just do... endlessly.
Like, this is a spinoff podcast here, yeah.
Yeah, we could do our own show just on this.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up the biggest bullshit example of what we're talking about today is The Verve and Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah.
They got sued by the former manager of the Rolling Stones, Andrew Lou Oldham, because like the backing strings part was something to do with some Rolling Stones thing, but I can't fucking hear that. I tried. I could not.
It's tough. It wasn't even a Stones record. It was from like a Stones classical tribute record.
Fuck
and they
that.
Nailed it from that. That one is nonsense. And
that's
it really messed up that dude's career.
Richard Ashcroft.
That's probably the most, that's got to be the most famous example, I think, beyond even George Harrison's.
That's some bullshit.
Before,
that's a great song, Bittersweet Symphony.
Really good. But yeah, that was my topic for today. I mean, I think we could come back to this at some point. There were a bunch that I left off, but we could have spent the whole time talking about Picture Book, and no one from the Kinks is suing anybody.
Yeah, wow. Because that's not like Oasis has definitely ripped off the Kinks too. I forget the specific example, but they're people of mind. They're
well. Sometimes there's a whole discography that is based on the work of others.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough out there. But, wow. All right, that was fun. Cool.
So what have you been listening to this week with Porco Rosso standing behind you in his trench coat?
Losing my opinion.
Well, I got some good news and some bad news.
Okay.
The bad news is, yes, I'm going to bring in a bunch more Japanese music here today for this episode. But I got an angle because I know, here's the thing. I play a bunch of these artists, these songs you never heard. You can't remember anything. It's all foreign names. The spin I got on this collection today is each of these artists, and I think these songs, they show, and this kind of appropriate fits in line sort of with your segment. They're like the Japanese equivalent of famous Western artist, like this, not quite a sound alike, although different degrees of that today, and you can assess track by track, but it's like this band, this song, this is the Japanese answer to Western band. You know what I'm saying?
And you're claiming that there's influence there? Or that
you're going to hear the influence.
Okay.
You're going to hear how much influence. It's varying degrees, but I'm going to present each of these artists to you today, introducing them for the first time. by, you know, sharing who I believe is their Western counterpart.
Okay. All right. Interesting angle for you to have another opportunity to talk about your Japanese music. Yeah. Is it belittling for us to approach it and say, hey, this is the Western equivalent? You know, like, I was asking, like, who came first? Like, is it cool to say, yes, they were influenced by whoever?
Well, that can be part of the conversation as I struggle to think of content for this segment. It's, you tell me, it's, you hear this, because there is homage in the Japanese, you know, that is a thing. Omaju, like that is a concept in Japanese culture, and certainly like that I discussed with Japanese musicians when I lived in Kyoto, Japan for 2.5 years. And
you did?
My college days, my salad days, and my sushi days. I lived in Kyoto. I did a band out there, had plenty of opportunities to talk about music with other musicians and artists we liked. And some of these comparisons are like that I pointed them out with my friends, or they like brought them to me.
Okay.
So it was a whole lot of fun.
So this is not like a secret.
Yeah, I'm not trying to take down. I like all these songs. I respect all these artists. Some of these artists I love. Like, I have deep fondness for this music.
Yes.
Just, and you know,
I don't think anyone doubts that.
I'm picking the examples that are particularly sound-alike-y.
Okay. Sound-alike-y.
See how you react to each given one here. And I think for the most part, it's conscious on the part of the artists. And it's kind of a question of what makes for like an artful homage versus like what's kind of stepping over the line too much.
Okay.
That's all
right. Let's do it. That sounds good.
So first up, we have the band Yonin Bayashi.
Are you going to let me decipher who I think, where the lineage is here? Or are you going to...
That's a good idea. I won't say who I have in mind until after I play the band. Good point.
Yeah, make me work for it.
Sure. But the band here is Yonin Bayashi, a 70s progressive rock band. The song is called Sora to Kumo. Sky and Clouds, from the album Ishoku Sokuhatsu, which translates to Explosive Situation. I am going to post the name of the song and artist in the show notes for each of these tracks here today. If you do want to look these songs up later and you don't want to have to remember the names, I will put the work in for that. But again, song is called Sora to Kumo. Yonin Bayashi, see what you think of this. This is from 1974. See if you dig it here.
The Doors.
This part is The Doors, yeah. But you wait.
Okay. Pink Floyd?
Yep, that's the other one. And the album cover is Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Not that folks at home can see it, but...
I really like this.
They're a good
band.
This album's solid.
Yeah. And I love this album cover with this this monkey with the pipe.
It's like a sloth. Yeah, so it's an illustration and kind of has like a Salvador Dali tone to it, but it's like a sloth with just giant red circles for eyes, and it's smoking a pipe and it's hanging on a branch, and then there's like a turtle in the background, and they're in the Sahara,
it's,
I think.
Pretty crazy looking. What year is this?
74.
74. Wow. It sounds great. Like, the sonics of it are fantastic, especially...
They had some goddamn good engineers over there in Tokyo. They're right up there with the folks in LA.
And I think you can... I don't think it's insulting to say you can hear The Doors and Pink Floyd in there, especially the year that it was released. I think everyone was kind of picking up on, well, at least what Pink Floyd were doing. I guess I, once I got to the chorus, I heard more Pink Floyd than Doors, but yeah, I really like that sound.
Yeah, check them out. All right, moving right along to my next pick. We're going to stay in the 70s here, at least for a while. This is from 1976. The artist is Minako Yoshida. I've played one of her songs on here before as an example of early city pop and how, like, city pop is kind of a useless term when you break it down, because it's like, well, this is city pop. This sounds like city pop. Like, what does that mean? It's more to just...
I feel like this whole show could be about city pop if we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
There's so much discussion within that genre.
You're talking about an era in Japanese recording history, and like, you're talking about like music produced in Tokyo between like the mid 70s and the mid 80s, late 80s basically. But Minako Yoshida, her album Flapper, again, great album. I played a different track from it before, but this time I'm going to play a song called Yume de Aetara, which means if I met you in my dreams, and then the follow up in the chorus is I would never want to wake up, which
Jeez.
I think that's a great little lyrical poetry there. Performed by Minako Yoshida, written by Eiichi Otake, if that name rings any bells. I brought him up a million times. And guess who's on bass?
My man.
Who's your man?
Hosono.
Hosono. Yeah. Haruomi Hosono's on bass. Guess who does backing vocals and does the arrangement and some other instruments too? Tatsuro Yamashita. That's right.
Oh my god.
So we got the whole gang together here.
I thought he came along later for some reason. His
solo career is later, but he started as a session guy with all the rest of them here until he broke out. But his start was like a band called Sugar Babe that was like a super group. You know, had a bunch of other familiar names collaborating with him there until he went off into slap bass.
Heaven.
Solo a cappella, doo-wop territory. But anyway. Yume de Aetara, let's listen to this tune. Tell me who you think, especially Otake and Yamashita, might have been influenced by with this one here.
Okay.
Castanets are in Clue.
Yeah, you know, but yeah, I get it, but this is good. I like this.
I like the song. I mean, I love this whole album. So who are you thinking of here?
I mean, the Phil Spector sound.
The Ronettes.
But I kind of, with this one, I feel less, I don't know, there's less of a straight line there because it's so, the influence of that is just in everything. So, yeah.
In everything, yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a Ronettes thing.
That's that.
I like it.
Yeah, you should check out that whole album.
And there's, I mean, there are a lot of artists that kind of go in that direction, even for an album or for a chunk of their career where they're like doing that sound. So I don't know. It's not as one-to-one for me as the last one where it's like, oh, that sounds like this. Yeah. Sounds like Pink Floyd or whatever. Like it's almost like it's its own genre. The girl group
genre, yeah.
60s feel.
Phil Spector doesn't necessarily own it always.
No, yeah. Not anymore. Maybe for a year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. How many famous songs that are, you know, great songs start with boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom,
boom,
boom. Yeah.
Just
yeah,
like
yeah.
Honey or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of those tropes. Wow, we're zipping right along here. Might even have time for five today. All right, this next one, we're getting out of the 70s, at least a little bit here. See if you can think of the band I have in mind here. The band is called Ogre, You Asshole. I want to explain where they got that name later.
Got a lot of questions.
Yeah, the song and the EP that the song is from is called Shiranai Aizu Shiraseru Ko. I forgot to translate that.
Is that what it means?
Can't tell you what that means off the top.
Does it mean I forgot to translate that?
Shiranai Aizu Shiraseru Ko. So Shiranai Aizu is like a signal you don't know, but then a child who teaches it to you. That's the best you're going to get from me, just looking at that blind here.
Wow.
This is from 2008.
Okay.
This is a modern Japanese indie guitar rock band. Johnny Marr, among others, is a fan of this group.
Cool.
They're pretty cool. See if you can clock which band this makes me think of.
Okay.
And I will say these guys have had a long career. They're still active. Their more contemporary stuff goes away from this guitar rock indie sound. They're definitely doing their own thing, but I don't know. See if this one feels like an homage to somebody else for you. This is a harder one, I will say.
It's cool. I've never heard of this band.
I don't know if you'll get this. This might be too.
I don't. I mean, it sounds like 2008. I mean, you hear like, you know, elements of like Modest Mouse.
You got it.
Is that really? You got it.
First try.
I mean, just like the staccato riff and the guitar tone,
and the voice,
a little bit. This guy is more melodic than your friend, sure. Isaac.
Yeah, they don't have the anger, the punk fury of Modest Mouse, but
I like that.
You should definitely check them out. And they're more current stuff is like synthy electronic, sort of like mellow, but sort of like dark psychedelic. They've done a whole bunch of stuff. They're great. They got their name, Ogre You Asshole, from Eric Judy, who's the bassist of Modest Mouse. So the story has it, Modest Mouse is touring in Japan in the early 2000s, and the dude from Ogre You Asshole, well, now known as Ogre You Asshole, like, they go to the show. Later, he's like talking to Eric Judy. He's like, give my band a name. Come on, give us a name. And Eric Judy's like, I really can't. And then he persists enough that Eric Judy just writes in marker on the guy's arm or whatever, Ogre You Asshole. And that's where they got the name.
Oh, so he meant ogre, and they took the whole thing. Yeah. That's great. Wow. Okay. So there is a connection there. Isn't it?
There's a connection to the mouse from their origins there.
I really like that sound. It takes me back to like the 2008 vibe.
Yeah. Check out their whole discog.
You know, it also sounds like a little bit, his voice reminds me of the dude from Band of Heathens.
I don't know that band.
I think they're called. Let me check that.
He's doing some research here, folks. He's hacking the interwebs.
Do not keep this in.
Taking a nice long pause while he looks up facts he could have prepared earlier.
On a topic I didn't know. No. Okay. Scratch all of that. Yeah. Band of Horses.
Band of Horses. I've heard of Band of Horses. Yeah,
it sounds like the guy.
Things start splitting at the seams now.
right.
Yeah.
No one's going to love you like
more
that
than
shit.
I do.
He does have a little bit of that.
That's a 2008 vibe. Band if I ever heard one.
Yeah. Yes. I think that song came out in 2008. Yeah. There are a lot of people singing like that at that point. But yeah. That's cool. I like that band.
Yeah. No, they're great. Again, I like all these bands. I like all these songs. It's just, you know, this is a fun game because you're 3 for 3 so far.
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see if you get this next one. This is like one of my favorite artists here. So this artist is I know her as Yumi Arai. All the albums of hers that I love, that's what she went by. She started her career in the early 70s. Mm. She married her like longtime producer and changed her name to that guy's last name, Matsutoya.
Okay.
And kept releasing albums, but as now Yumi Matsutoya. Like, when would you ever see that in Western music where like the established female artist like marries a dude and it's like, well, I took his name. I have to go by that name now.
Yeah, I can't think of an example of that happening.
And the quality, like, she still got a few good songs after that, but like the quality. So I know her. I refuse to call her Yumi Matsutoya, but
okay.
Her common popular nickname in Japan is Yuming. So I'll just call her Yuming. She's had a lot of songs in Miyazaki movies. Most recent example, In the Wind Rises, her song Hikoki Gumo. Which means vapor trail. That was in the closing credits of that movie. I want to play a different song from that same album, though, Hikoki Gumo. This is from 1973. I'm going to play a song called Kitto Ieru. Guess who's on bass?
Hiromi Hosono.
Yeah, you got it.
Jeez, man.
And the guitarist is Shigeru Suzuki, who was in a band with Hosono. I can't go down that road, though. We're going to run out of time. But we got a lot of happy end energy on this song, suffice to say. But love this track. See if you pin down who she kind of sounds like, who she might have been influenced by or compared to.
Okay. Johnny Mitchell?
That's close enough. That's one of them. Who's the other one?
I don't know.
All right. I'm thinking Carole King more than Joni Mitchell.
You're right.
I guess you don't hear the piano in this one as much, but...
Yeah.
Kind of the nasality.
I kind of disagree.
Really?
I said Joni Mitchell because I thought I was supposed to be comparing it to someone. I feel like this is
wholly unique.
Nothing is wholly unique, but it's. I think it's its own thing.
It's its own thing more than the other examples.
Yeah, the other examples I was able to figure out the lineage. This one, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a singer-songwriter 70s vibe.
Yeah.
It has like an element of the later, jazzier Laurel Canyon feel, which is why I thought Joni Mitchell initially. But yeah, no, I think it is a collage of some of those influences, but there's nothing that's sticking out in the way the other ones were.
All right. Well, I'll take it. I mean, she's definitely an amazing recording artist, singer-songwriter. Certain song, maybe there was like a different song that had more of a tapestry vibe, but I'll take it. I know we got to wrap this up. I do have one last quick example. I wonder, this might be a challenge for you, but we'll see if you get it. Okay. I'm only going to play just a few moments of it. See if you can pin this one down. The artist is Kenji Ozawa. This is his song, Bokura ga Tabi ni Deru Ryu, The Reason We Go Travel, from his 1994 album, Life. Mm. See if, I'm not sure if you'll get this, but see if this might give you any kind of feeling one way or the other.
Well, I mean, this is just a cover of You Can Call Me Al.
Are you saying this sounds like Paul Simon?
Did this come first?
Nope. This came in 1994. So,
I mean, they must have paid him for that, right?
Here's the thing. I don't think so. I think if you're operating on the other side of the world and you're in a totally different market, I think you can just get away with that shit.
Well, hey, guess what?
To bring it back to your topic from the top of the episode.
Hey, guess what? If you're doing that to a song from Graceland, I think you're all good. I think you're allowed. I think anyone should be allowed to do whatever they want with Graceland songs. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You almost feel like an accessory hearing that, don't you? You're like, whoa, shut it down. You can't do that.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, his, you know, the influences on that record are pretty one-to-one for himself. So I think it's, yeah.
Okay.
It's fine. People should be allowed to pick apart Graceland.
All right, I'm gonna take that riff for the opening of my next Niagara Moon album. I think I'll be just fine, probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You can call me Thomas. What did we learn here today?
A lot. I think we learned a lot. I think we learned a lot about Picture Book and how influential that song was on 2000s indie rock.
I learned that the Hollies co-wrote Creep.
Crazy.
From 1993. I never would have known that.
Nobody talks about it. It's like one of the most famous 90s songs. And it's just like, imagine like you find out Smells Like Teen Spirit was co-written by someone else. Or had a co-write credit.
Cheap Trick or something.
Crazy.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, you got anything to promote? Anything you want to plug before we head on out of here?
No, sir.
You want to promote getting 8 hours sleep?
I would love to promote that. I actually did just finish recording a new EP. We just finished it.
Oh, whoa.
And I don't want to say when it's coming out, but the top of next year at some
point.
But I don't have it. I'll give you the date when I have it.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And it features the playing of one Thomas Irwin.
Oh, you're finally releasing those
on
tunes,
several of the
huh?
tracks. Yes, several of the tracks have your work
Hell
on them.
Hell yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I got nothing going on. I'm still just always generating new music, but who knows when it's going to come out. You got a recent full-length album from me anyway, Rebuild the Circus.
Yeah.
Check out Niagara Moon on the streaming platforms. Don't put me on a bot playlist. Get my shit taken down. And hey, listener, you heard this today. You liked it. You want to hear more? Make sure to subscribe on your platform of choice. Got episodes every other Wednesday. You can follow Losing My Opinion at Losing My Opinion on Instagram, TikTok, and I'm ashamed to say it now.
X.
We will not be doing Elon Musk's next live stream, though. We did decline that offer. And we're running a survey still, the LMO survey, link in the show notes. If you just want to tell us anything about yourself, let us know what you think of the show. If you got any ideas in particular, merch suggestions, anything like that.
We need that. Yeah.
And you know what? Kenji Ozawa, I think if he tried to pull that shit with the You Can Call Me Al riff on his tune, I think if he released that album in America and not just the Japanese market, I think he might have gotten in trouble with old Paul Simon there. I could be wrong now.
So mo anai kedo.
Yes, but I don't think so. I'm surprised you haven't done that so far. I feel like maybe you did.
I have
once.
Done that like at least twice. Okay. Yeah. You just blocked it out.
Okay. I've definitely blocked it out. Yeah. I think Paul Yes would come after him. But as I said, if you should have license to take melodies from Graceland.
Yeah.
Like that record should be open the books on that record because of, you know, the influences that he took on that.
Go after the Eagles next, Don Henley. See how that goes for you.
He's a really sweet fellow.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd be totally cool with it. Real sweetheart. Well, thank you, listener, for digging in. We will see you next week. So long, suckers.